Desert Healthcare District and Foundation presents a podcast that supports your health and wellness where you live. This is Healthy Desert, Healthy You, hosted by Will Dean. Now, here's Will.
Hello, friends. My guest today is Dr. Dan Lobston, a cardiothoracic surgeon elected to the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation Board in November 2024, Zone 3. He brings to the board more than 10 years of experience in the medical field. He currently serves as board treasurer and on the Finance and Administration Committee. Prior to that, he graduated in 2014 from LSU Health Sciences Center at the New Orleans School of Medicine. Welcome, Dan.
Hey, Will. Thanks for having me on the podcast. So glad we could finally connect through our busy schedules.
Yes.
But looking forward to connecting with you. I know we work together in the healthcare board, and it's nice what you guys have set up here. I think it looks great, so I'm excited to be a part of this podcast.
I am so glad that you are here. I want to paint a picture or a snapshot of your childhood. So if you could tell us where you grew up and describe what your childhood was like.
Yes, I grew up, I was born in Alaska and then grew up in Ohio. So pretty typical childhood. You know, I grew up in the 90s. So that was a good time. I was always a adventurous kid, always exploring. You know, I came from a family of engineers, so you always got into something, you know, and I felt pretty fortunate for my childhood because I was able to always just explore and really just kind of be a kid, could go wherever. Your parents weren't worried because your neighbor's parents were always watching out for you too. So you were never without a watchful eye. So you always knew you kind of had to behave, but it also gave you that freedom to be a true kid, which I think was an amazing experience.
Yeah, I grew up close to there, actually in Kentucky, so the neighboring state.
Yeah,
so it sounds very familiar. Did you always want to be a doctor?
No, not at all, actually. At one point, I was going to go to the Air Force Academy, so I had my letters to do that out of high school. So that was on my list, and I had bad vision that they wouldn't accept. Now I've had LASIK surgery, but they wouldn't accept that to be a fighter pilot or anything, so I kind of put that on the back burner. When I was a kid, though, I wanted to be like a pyrotechnic. I always wanted to live in Hollywood and be the guy on the set blowing stuff up and designing it. So I used to do that as a kid. And then,
You would blow things up as a kid?
Well, you'd set up like a scene. You'd be like, you'd be watching like a movie, you know, as a kid. You'd watch like, I'm trying to think of some of like the famous like movie scenes, like in Men in Black, there was a scene where they like blow up the White House or something. And it was just like,
right. You'd
set it up yourself and try to film it and do that. So I would always kind of structure, you know, my scenes around scenes I saw in the movie. And it was fun. It was just like what I thought I wanted to do. And it was good engineering work because you had to build something, figure out how you were going to let it, you know, blow up and make it look cool. And now with CGI, that job's pretty much done. So it wasn't a bad thing that I didn't get into it. But I always was going to be an engineer probably. It's like I said, I got it honestly, like my grandfather's an engineer, my dad's an engineer, my uncle's an engineer, one of my sisters is an engineer, my son is going to be an engineer. It's just, I don't know, I think we're just wired that way. You know, you're wired to take things apart, to figure out how things work. And so that's why I ended up going to Purdue to do chemical engineering. So that was my initial, I guess, decision tree was to go into that. It was a great choice. You know, I learned so much about how to think and how to really look at a problem from an outside eye. And so engineering was different than other schooling because it didn't matter what they taught you in class. Like there was never something you had to memorize or learn. It was always like, here's an idea, understand how this works, and then apply it to something you've never seen again. And that was engineering. That was every class, every day. Here's what we're teaching you the principles on. Now go show us that you know it by applying it to something you've never seen.
Right.
And and on our engineering exams, it was wild because you never got the answers complete, usually. You never solved them. They just wanted to know that you knew how to think about it because the math required to solve them, you never had enough time to do it. And so you had to get in the point where you were taking these tests and exams and realize what they were trying to test was your ability to think through the problem, not your ability to actually complete it because you didn't have enough time to actually do the work required. And so about halfway through my engineering, I had been working at DuPont Chemicals it's called a cooperative program. So I took a 5-year program, but I worked every other semester as an engineer, which helped pay my way through school, but also helped me to get some experience. And that experience was critical because I got to be an engineer, which I enjoyed. but it also exposed me to just some other people that lived outside of my, you know, I was down in like Middle Tennessee, and I was down there, made some very good friends. And I had just had a few friends that got sick. And one of them was in a children's hospital in Nashville. And that was like my first real experience in a hospital with somebody who was sick. And I really liked what I saw there in terms of how the doctors were engaged and involved and the coordination between teams and the excellence required to deliver the care. So it kind of like sparked a little interest in me.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I said, you know, maybe there's something here with medicine that I want to pursue. And I had to take some extra classes in engineering. So I took my pre-med recs while I was there. And that was kind of the start of me getting interested. I started doing some volunteer work in medicine. And I said, you know, there might be some potential here. And then I, towards the end of my college, I ended up deciding I was going to apply to medical school. But I kind of did it last minute, which is never a good idea. You know, I was always just like, I think I'm going to do this. And they're like, well, you got to take the MCAT. And I'm like, all right, I'll take it. I sat down and took it. And I did okay. I didn't do excellent, but I did fine. But I didn't really prepare for it. It was just kind of like, what day are we doing this test again? It's like when I took my SATs, like, what day are you doing this test? Wow. And I was like, oh yeah, you're going to be doing it on this day. I was like, okay, fine. I sat down and took the test. And then I applied. And that same year, so this is my fifth year of college, you know, I was graduating medical school, graduating college, finishing up all my senior design programs. I was getting married. And I had applied for jobs too, because it was kind of this idea, like, I think I'm going to go to medical school, but I'm not sure. So I got accepted for some jobs and I had put them on like hold, and I was waiting to hear back from medical schools. And I heard back from one that said, hey, you're on this wait list, but probably going to get in. And so I said, you know what? I turned down all my job offers, all of them. And I was like, I'm going to get in. There's no problem. And then I graduated in May, got married a few weeks later. And then right before I got married, like a week or two before, found out that I didn't get into medical school. So now I'm graduating, I'm getting married, I have no job. I'm like, my in-laws are like, man, this guy's a winner. He's a superstar. You can really pick him. And so we ended up spending our honeymoon in Tennessee. And then the summer I spent calling everybody being like, you know, I made a decision to, you know, I think I'm going to work for a couple of years before I go back to medical school. I didn't tell them I didn't get in. I was just like, you know, that. So anyway, so that's why we ended up, I ended up working as an engineer at ExxonMobil in New Orleans for a few years. And while I was there, I was still interested in medicine and it never really shook me. So then I went back and actually studied for my MCATs, took my MCATs, got into school at LSU. So that was my roundabout way to medicine.
That is incredible. I mean, to completely shift gears like that, the interest in medicine, that must be a real passion.
It is. I mean, it's, you know, I went into medical school wanting to be a pediatric oncologist because that was kind of my first experience. I said, hey, I was in Nashville. I was at Vanderbilt Hospital. I saw their children's hospital. I thought it was great. I love what they did. And then in medical school, you get a chance to your third year of medical school to kind of explore all the different fields of medicine. So you go do all these rotations. And so I did heart surgery on a whim. Honestly, it was like my first rotation or second rotation. And I had a great rotation. I worked with a surgeon, his name's William Risher out of LSU. And so he was there. I had an excellent surgical resident on with me, and we had a really good month. And I went into it just saying, hey, I want to see the heart. I'll probably never see it again. You know, it's an opportunity in medicine that most people don't get to see a beating heart and what gets done to fix it. And so I had a great month. They involved me in the surgeries. I got a ton of experience and I was like, wow, it's pretty cool. Like if you love to do adrenaline rush things, this is definitely it. Try stopping somebody's heart, fixing it, and then restarting it. Like it never gets old. I mean, and when you first go into it, I would have dreams about scrubbing into surgery and breaking the sterile field because I was so nervous about it. And so I didn't sleep well in that rotation at all. I would literally wake up with an itch on my face and I wouldn't scratch it while I was sleeping, which you normally do when you're asleep, you'll kind of touch your face. I wouldn't do it because I was having dreams of being scrubbed into surgery the entire time. So it was wild. Wow. Yeah. And then the rest of the year you spend doing rotations, and I did a pediatric oncology rotation and it just didn't click. I did some other like orthopedics. People are like, oh, you look like an orthopedic surgeon. I'm like, I do like ortho, but I broke my leg playing basketball. And it was like a very visceral feeling when I broke it. And I broke it right before I started medical school. And so like, and you feel that crunch and the twist and everything that happened. And then you go do that every day. I've never had like a visceral gut reaction to anything in medicine, but breaking bones. I couldn't do it. So that was off the table. And I went and did a few other rotations, and then it ended up being heart surgery. I couldn't shake the idea of it. And it actually lined up really well with what I was doing as an engineer. As an engineer, I was designing fluid systems that would use pumps, pipes, fluid flow. And the heart is really, and the heart in the vascular system is just a big pump, pipes and fluid flow with some valves in there that we fix. So it lined up really well with what I knew from the mechanics of being a chemical engineer, translated really well into the physiology of the heart.
So tell me how you got to the Valley. Was that a matter of looking for a professional opportunity and finding sure. one here?
Yeah, I mean, the Valley is a special place. We would come out here when I was in Los Angeles doing my training, and my family always loved coming out here. And there was just a really good opportunity to fill the need because it was a growing area, good hospital systems. There was some infrastructure there that I could build. And I came out here to build a program. And that's what I told them when I interviewed out here at the hospital I work at was, hey, I'm going to come here and build this program. You have a big need. You have a big group. We can expand. And that's what we've been able to do. So I really looked across the country when it came to jobs. But when I found the opportunity out here, I mean, really, I really found it. It didn't find me. It was somebody mentioned that there could be an opportunity out here. So I reached out. It just lined up with everything that I wanted to do.
Okay, excellent. So I'm going to fast forward a bit. So how and when did you first find out about the healthcare district?
I was working out at the gym and somebody told me, you know, I always want to be impactful in my life. Everything I do, you know, I wake up every morning thinking about what's going to leave the biggest lasting impact. And I was at the gym one day and I was just talking about the healthcare and the needs of the community and like, how do we address this? As a surgeon, I'm doing one-to-one care, right? I can only operate at one time in one place on one person. And I wanted to do more. And he was like, well, do you know about the healthcare districts? I'm like, not a clue about the healthcare district. And he goes, well, you should look into it because it's an organization out here that impacts the whole community you're working in. And so that was really the first introduction. I did that introduction with him. And then I did a little research online about it. And then I was actually invited to the Blood Bank Gala. So the live stream Blood Bank Gala a few years ago. And one of the guys right. I had operated on was being presented there. I mean, so I was there with him as a surgeon. He was the guy I operated on, had an aneurysm and we fixed, and they presented his case there. And I was brought there, but the table I sat at was actually the table of the Desert Healthcare Board because they had an open seat. And so my wife and I sat there. I sat next to Carol. I met Letty. I met Chris. I met the whole team. And I was like, this is very serendipitous to be here at a random gala and to be at their table when I was already interested in this. And so I was able to kind of hear a lot about the organization. And the more I heard about the impact and what's being and the changes coming. And so that's really what spawned my interest to even getting into the public health sector like we're in.
Wow. You get that little sign from the universe.
It is.
Sitting at the truly. Table. Yeah.
So you can't deny it at that point. You're like, man, this is meant to be.
Right. Had you run for an elected office before?
Not in, you know, the public. I was the similar thing. I ran for like my class president in medical school. Just one of the things that I was like, you know, I'm going to do this just so we can really leave a lasting mark at the school. And we did. And so I was a class president. Then I eventually became the student body president over at LSU. You know, we transformed a lot of what we did there. And organizations. That was my first kind of taste of it.
Okay.
It turns out I like to be in leadership roles. So it was just kind of a natural fit when the opportunity came for the healthcare district.
I'm always curious about how the reality is different from what you might expect. So you're like 2 years into your first 4-year term. How is it different being on the board than what you thought it might be?
I mean, I was actually pleasantly surprised because all the board members, you know, we all come from a lot of different backgrounds. We all have a lot of different personalities. We all work a little bit differently, but we all get along really well. We all have a similar focus of improving the community that we work in. And I think we've kept that front and centered in all of our conversations, even when we don't agree on certain things or our area of our district might think differently than another district. We've been able to come together. And I think as the public's going to see when we talk about this strategic plan that we've put together, I haven't been a part of a lot of public strategic planning before, but what is coming out of what we've just created, and that's been within my first 2 years, has been much more impactful than I ever thought the first 2 years was going to be serving on the board.
Right. Yeah. A friend of mine, I had not thought of this. I know the board is very diverse. You mentioned the different backgrounds, but it's also a slightly younger board than we've had in past years, someone mentioned to me. So that's been really interesting.
Yeah, it is a younger board, but we still have a mix of balance, mm-hmm. which I think is good. But bringing in a younger perspective also brings in some newer ideas. We bring in some social media ideas. You're doing this now, we're podcasting, you know, and it's very comfortable for, I think, the younger generation to be on these podcasts and understanding the importance of actually getting some of this out there. And so I think what we're going to see is that having this mix of generation really is in alignment with how the Coachella Valley is structured. You know, it's not just an older community anymore. It's not a retirement community or a vacation community. It's actually a very much a budding, growing community of a lot of younger people, and it's expanding.
Absolutely. So you mentioned the strategic plan. It's May 2026, and we've been developing this plan since August of 2025, and we're very close to finalizing it.
Sure.
What has been your experience through this process of developing the strategic plan?
Well, I think it's been such a positive experience with the organization we were working with to help us with the strategic planning. It's been very positive with the excellent staff that we have at the Desert Healthcare District. And then it's been very positive with the board members. I mean, we've really seen alignment in all areas of healthcare, from how we want to deliver care to how we want to recruit new people to deliver that care. So new healthcare providers. We've talked about, you know, some of the things that really are required to meet the needs of our community. We've talked about the importance of data and how that factors in. And so I think when the public's going to see, when we release kind of our strategic plan and our pillars that are associated with that, a lot of thought went into that. And it encompassed a very big goal. I mean, these are big, audacious goals that we're putting together that really set the district up as well as the Coachella Valley for the next 30, 40, 50 years. I mean, that's the perspective that we took into when we built the strategic plan, is what is this valley going to look like in 50 years? And I think the diversity of the board, as well as the input from the staff in our consulting group, really allowed us to dive deep into those thoughts. And we spent a long time. You asked me what one thing changed about before I started and now. I didn't think we'd be having this many meetings, you know, and I don't think we used to. But now with the strategic plan, it's been not a full-time job, but it's been a lot more work than I was told it was going to be when I started, because I'm a busy surgeon. And I was like, okay, I can factor in this number of meetings. It's been like triple or quadruple that, but every one of those meetings has been so worthwhile, so valuable. And that was a surprise to me, the amount of work we put in. But what was a bigger surprise is how positive the outcome was for a group that never knew each other before.
Yeah, that's great. I think from the outside, you understand there's one major board meeting every month, but there are a lot of other meetings that take place as well.
And when you add strategic planning for a 50-year plan and what that looks like, completely transformed the number of meetings we had. But I was able to prioritize it and fit it into the schedule as much as I could because of, again, you want to leave a lasting impact. This is the time to do it.
Right. And you're right, the emphasis on the data-driven approach is new for the district. But there's some things that we've learned during the development process of the strategic plan that are not new. For example, we know there's a lack of physicians and nurses and medical professionals in the Valley. From your perspective, what needs to happen to actually bring those medical professionals into the Valley?
Yeah, I mean, it's really a multi-prong approach to bring them here. I mean, the patients are here. So you're not like, hey, we need to go recruit patients to come in. To bring new providers in, I think it's important to understand the provider landscape. So you're talking about bringing in physicians, you're talking about bringing in nurses, you're talking about bringing in physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists. And so some of that is done by recruiting from the outside. And so to do that, they have to be able to come into an institution where they're welcomed, where they feel supported by their local physician group, where they have the ability to expand and grow the practices that they want to. So, you know, I came out here because of the opportunity to expand the cardiovascular surgery space, and we've been able to do that. I think you need to provide that environment to the physicians coming out, and you will be able to recruit some of the best. I think when it comes to nurses and therapist, a lot of it you can recruit, but a lot of it you can train here at the local hospital, or not hospitals, but the colleges. And I think our College of the Desert and some of the other local colleges have done a great job of really being able to train here and keep here. And that's the most important part, is you don't want to train them and let them leave. And so retention is probably the biggest concern that I have, is that people will come out here to train or to work for a few years as a physician, but how do you keep them? And again, you keep them by showing them the opportunity to take care of the patients. And that's going to be the healthcare board partnering with the hospitals and the clinics that are here to build that relationship between the hospital and the clinician to bring them out here. Because again, we don't employ physicians right now at the Desert Healthcare Board. We don't run any specific clinics to deliver care. We are kind of an overseer of the healthcare of the entire district. And so really we have to impact both the recruitment of the physicians, the training of the nurses, the training of the staff, and then making sure that when they're here, they feel welcomed and that there's reasons they can stay and grow a family.
Right. So if you met a young medical resident here who was actually considering staying, what would you say to sell them on the idea?
I mean, so one, it has to be a fit. Like if your family lives on the East Coast, this may not be for you. Now, if you're married with kids and you're looking for a place to live, that would be one component. So I always take the family approach and say, you have a small family and you're comfortable living away from your family, or your family's somewhat local. Great. My family lives in Ohio. That's where my parents live. Sisters live in some other states around. So we were all kind of spread out anyways. I was in LA for 7 years and I wanted to stay close to my friends and connections in Los Angeles, but I didn't want to work in Los Angeles necessarily. So that was a reason that I stayed. I would also tell them there's a big opportunity here. And so we want to attract people that want to tackle big problems, be able to build out here, because really we're kind of at the not ground zero. I mean, we have practices that are here, but the growth rate of people that live here year round is so fast that we are looking for people in every specialty to come out here to build a practice. Say, hey, I'm going to put my flag here and grow. And just from my own experience, being here for 4.5, almost 5 years, we've grown a program now that is recognized nationally. We have programs that come out from other hospitals to come see how we operate at my institution. And that's been great. So it's put this area on the map because we came out here and built that program.
Right. So you have your own practice, but you are affiliated with a hospital, right?
Yeah. So I work with a physician group that then works at that hospital as well. And then have my own physician practice as well.
Yeah. I do like the combined approach to ensuring that we have the medical professionals we need. You talked about recruitment, but also retention of those in the colleges and universities. And anecdotally, I'm hearing more and more people who grow up here actually want to stay here. So there's an opportunity for those people as well, if they're interested in medicine, of course.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think if you're from here, coming back here makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Again, we have as the Valley population grows and is the younger population, those kids are going to grow up, they're going to go to school, and then oftentimes they want to come back home. And so we want to make sure they have a platform to actually bring those skill sets back here. And to grow a medical industry, you know, it's not just having a hospital to do it. It's having clinics, it's having EMS services, there's a whole lot of ancillary staff that comes along with that. Some of it's also housing. You know, you have to remember that coming out here, the housing prices have gone up significantly even since I've moved. And that's a problem. You know, you want to recruit younger families to come out here or new young working professionals. So looking at a way to provide them stability for their home life and for their family really is a way to kind of lay the welcome mat out front. And I think the district looking at how we can participate in making these people feel welcome, to making them feel like they should stay here, that's going to help our retention. I think as we begin to retain more of the staff, we'll begin to, it's like if you build it, they will come. And if you have some here, more are going to come because they're going to hear about how great it is out here and the opportunity.
Right. And a lot of what we're talking about is, if not exactly mentioned in the strategic plan that we're considering, then the framework is there for those things to happen. So I'm excited for people to see that when it's approved. By the board.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. So, in thinking of this, is very much a transformational moment for the healthcare district. Today, I was saying in a meeting that it's very much a reimagining of what the district is and what it can be. How are you feeling about the future of the district?
I think I have a limited perspective, so I can't talk about the past of the district. I can tell you, I thought it was a little concerning that I had never heard of the healthcare district as a healthcare professional out here. until somebody at the gym mentioned it to me, who he said he had heard about it, but didn't know much else. So I think that, I don't know if that's a historical context of how the district has operated in the past. I think when they got out of operating hospitals, it was hard to re-identify yourself and what your purpose is. But through this planning process, and where even just the people from, you know, 5 to 6 years ago on the board have really brought us to, has expanded the boundaries of the district, has set us up for this now strategic plan that I think, with some of the things that have changed from the Measure AA on the ballot to the strategic plan, I think the impact we're going to have and awareness of the community of our involvement in the community and our responsibility to make sure that we deliver appropriate, accessible care to everybody in the Valley is going to be something that will be recognized, not just in our region, but I think in California. And my hope is that down the road, we can take what we've modeled in our area and begin to apply across the country about how do you make a community impact in healthcare as a public board. And I think we're going to do that very well here.
Absolutely. And definitely raising awareness about who the district is and what we do. That's very much part of the strategic plan. That has evolved over the years. I think you're right. There was a time when the focus was primarily on grant making. And so there were no direct services provided. And so there was a reluctance, but there just wasn't much.
The vision was different then than it is now. And that was the vision of the board then. That's how it was structured. And I think over the years, we've changed that vision and we've seen the opportunity for big impact. And now we're just stepping in.
Yeah, I know that I think that you are a big fan of our mobile medical clinic program. Talk a little bit about that and how you see that fitting into the future of the district. And I will say that you are one of 7 board members, so we're not saying anything is definitive.
Of course. I mean, I was very excited about those because it's our one delivery mechanism as a board and as a district where we deliver care, and it's a chance to provide accessible care to everybody in the Valley and meet them literally where they are, which I think is the hardest part is, you know, there's not clinics scattered throughout the Valley that are easily accessible. And there's a lot of needs out there that aren't getting met. So one of the things that when I first got onto the board and worked with some of the people running the mobile units, some of the stuff I wanted to understand more about it got me even more excited. One of those things was, you know, what's the cost to deliver care through a mobile unit? Because, you know, we're hearing about it nationally, locally, at the state level, that cost of healthcare is rising and it's limiting access because insurance premiums are rising. The cost of everything in healthcare has been going up. And so when I asked about, hey, what's the cost to deliver care for one visit? And I heard the numbers, it's a fraction of what it costs us to deliver it at the health center. And we're able to deliver that patient not only a physician visit, not only a follow-up, not only medications, but we can encompass that all together. And if they don't have insurance, we can look at enrolling them insurance. So you're doing 5 things in one visit and you're doing it very efficiently. We don't have to worry about them having transportation. We don't have to worry about them missing their appointments because we're setting those appointments with them and meeting them where they are. And those visits, you know, they'll tell you the visits fill up right away. We open up a day of visits and they're full because the need is there. And so I think what I was most excited about is that that's very transformational and impactful to say that I can deliver effective care at a reduced cost that is easily accessible to patients. That's not being done a lot across the country. And so that's when I say, I think we can model healthcare here in the Valley. That's one of the areas and avenues that I think we've already performed in and we're beginning to lead in. And I think over the next 2 or 3 years with the implementation of our strategic plan, you're going to see more of that. And I'm hoping it's a model that can then be replicated across the country. So again, as a surgeon, I'm not here to just don't want to do one-to-one care. I love that. But if I want to leave an impact, I know that I have to impact more than just one person at one time at the surgery table. And this is the way to do that.
Right. It's so great because it removes so many barriers so that you actually get to see the patients, because there's so much to overcome to get people to a clinic or a hospital. So what else? Well, let me ask you, do you have any concerns at all about the future of, say, the future of healthcare in the Valley?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's probably can translate to a thought nationally and statewide. And regionally. I think it's all related. I mean, my biggest concern is that there's becoming a disconnect between the people providing the care and the patients. There's a lot of gaps in between. So it's very hard as a physician to have a direct one-to-one relationship with a patient. And I think that's probably our hardest thing to overcome with how our current healthcare system is designed. And so there's a lot of barriers. There's a lot of middlemen tied in between that relationship that I think in order to begin delivering more care, more affordable care, physicians have to be in a leadership spot throughout all of healthcare. And unfortunately, that's just not where we're currently sitting. So I think at the moment, our healthcare system is very unaffordable. I think it's very expensive to deliver the care that we're currently doing. I think that's limiting access and putting a burden on every health system, on every home, on every family, on every employer, because those costs are high. And what I like about what the healthcare district is doing, again, we're starting to do that by delivering some of the care through mobile clinics. We're able to begin offering mechanisms to recruit new physicians here that make it more attractive to come to this area specifically. We're able to support training institutions like College of the Desert, like the other local colleges that are training staff, so that maybe we can make it more affordable to become a healthcare provider, or we can provide some benefits for becoming a healthcare provider in the Coachella Valley that helps to offset some of these barriers that we're currently facing.
Right. So can you give me an example of when you're talking about the, I guess, people or what are systems in the middle between the physician and the patient? What is that?
Sure. Honestly, it's the insurance currently.
Okay.
I can't have a contract with you, Will, as a patient. You know, if you have health insurance and your health insurance doesn't want you to see me, I can't see you, right? Right. Or I can, but if you were to have care with me, none of it would be covered. So that's a problem. I mean, I just had a patient literally yesterday, cardiologist called me and said, and I saw this patient in February and I needed to refer it to another physician because we do some of these procedures together. The insurance had denied it. They denied it. They wouldn't let him go see this other physician. And I said, this is the people out here that are needed to do this care. So now, rather than me talking about how I'm going to go fix this person, which we've already done, we've talked about it, but I've got to now take extra time to go convince some insurance company to allow them to see the other physician they need to see. Who's it? I mean, this is our market. We don't have a huge market like, oh, there's 15 people that do this. No, there's like two, right? And so I'm one of them and I need them to see the other one to do this procedure. And the insurance is denying it. So now you're talking 3-4 months for a referral. So that's a big obstruction and barrier that shouldn't exist, because between the physicians, it's no problem. We say, hey, I have a patient for you to see. Here's who it is. I'd like you to see him. He's like, sure, I'll see him in clinic next week. And then the insurance gets involved and says, actually, you're not credentialed for us to see it. And that this makes no sense, because right. Again, the people that are doing the care, that are deciding what's being done, are here. We're willing to do it. And you've got these middle obstructions that are delaying care. And so it's delaying care across not just this area. This is nationwide. And so right. I think as a country and as a society, we have to figure out how we're going to bridge that gap. And right. I think if you put physicians in charge, again, you make those decisions, we put the patient first in everything we do. And that's what we dedicate our lives towards. And so I think that's just one example. And I'm sure there's people that are going to listen to this that can also have a similar example. The other problem is, you know, healthcare costs. You can't come to me and I can tell you what it's going to cost for your healthcare, right? Because it's going to go through 3 or 4 different hands. And so every time it touches a hand, the price goes up. And that's a problem. And so you can't come into a doctor and say, hey, how much is it going to cost for me to do this? You're going to be like, really don't know. Depends on your insurance, depends on your deductible. Really depends on the relationship the hospital has with the insurance company to dictate that. And that's a problem, because then you get people who have medical debt that they don't even know about, or that, hey, they went and get the procedure and they're still receiving bills 3, 4, 5, 10 months later. And you're like, how am I still receiving a bill for something that was performed then? And I never knew I was going to get charged all this. Because right. The people that are actually doing the work, the physicians, can't tell you what it's going to cost. We don't have a transactional relationship. We're the only business that the person providing the service and the customer has zero financial relationship at all. And that's the middleman, and that's the problem with where our current system sits.
I see. Yeah. Thank you for those examples. I'm going to end on an optimistic note.
It's good. It's all positive. We're making changes. Trust me. I'm very positive about the outlook, but I'm also very truthful about what work needs to be done to transform the system.
Yeah. Okay. So what most excites you about this time at the district, in the district?
I mean, I just feel very fortunate that I've been able to time a lot of my life, you know, and I feel very lucky because it just seems opportunities continue to come. And so to join the district when we're at a very big turning point in, again, Measure AA and the actions that were taken during that election cycle, plus leading into the strategic planning that was really kind of driven by what was going on with Measure AA and just the aptitude of the community and the willingness of the community to begin to accept the healthcare change and the need that's there. I mean, it's just it's a perfect opportunity to have massive impact. And so I just feel very fortunate to be there because this is going to be some of the most impactful years for the healthcare district these next 2 to 5 years as we begin to implement our strategy and start to see it take hold is really going to be the foundation of what this district's going to look like in 50 to 100 years. And so to be a part of that, to be a founding member of that part, I just feel very fortunate.
Yeah, it's very exciting. All right, Dr. Dan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. This is great. I love the podcast. I love what you're doing. So it's just good to get the word out there to people. So I'm sure I'll see you at a meeting soon.
Yeah, absolutely. So for everyone who's watching, please tell your friends that you can follow us on Spotify, Apple Music, Audible, YouTube. We're all over the place. Until then, everyone, be well.
Yeah, thanks, Will.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Healthy Desert, Healthy You. This podcast is a production of the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation in Palm Springs, California. For more information, please visit the website dhcd.org. Our annual conference site is healthydeserthealthyyou.com. This podcast is available at most major podcast portals, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Captivate.fm, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe.